So I have about all of those. It's a good reason to be angry, to be afraid, to be depressed. And I was all of those. I got addicted to feeling sorry for myself for a while in my life, you know. I'm not proud to say that. I listened to music that would make me sad. I drink. I do those things as a medicine of choice, I heard it called once by a survivor. But that medicine wasn't really healing. It was stopping the pain for a while, but it wasn't healing. And I think part of the saddest part of this for me, and one of the reasons why I wanted to do this podcast, is because of children. You know, I heard this term intergenerational, that this problems become intergenerational. That means passed on from parent to child to grandchild to great-grandchild, you know. And I could see the sense of that. That if we don't break the cycles of how we're thinking and how we're dealing with our emotions, it's better. It's not good to be guided by negative emotions. But to sit down and draw out a map, make a plan of what we're going to do. And have a plan A, B, and C, not just one plan. Then go all out for it together. Create a base of people that think the same, that have the same goals and objectives, and go out and do it. You know, it was when I think about my journey, the dark part of my journey, as I described to you, coming from the light, from my parents' house in this little house, that was in the light. There was joy there. There's no fear in that environment. Then when I left there, I started to experience fear. I'm one of those ones in school, you know, that I'm hiding all the time, not wanting to speak up. I remember clearly at times that my breathing is so shallow that I get dizzy because I'm afraid the teacher's going to ask me a question or ask me to write something on the blackboard. I remember that fear. After I became an adult, it turned to anger. It's not good living with people that are angry all the time or being with people that are wrapped in that cocoon of anger. It emanates all. You know, I've talked to people and I've listened to people and I'd hear statements like, oh, those people in that room were so angry. You can go in there, you can cut the air with a knife. Which proves that this anger is real energy and it goes and permeates the air. I didn't come, you know, and the sad part about this is that we turned on each other, on our reserves and our communities, or wherever we are. Now I see people doing it on Facebook, social media, attacking people. And I'll say we must stop that. We must not do that. That's not the indigenous way of living. So I watch, you know, what's going on. I'd see the impacts. I was talking to my mother once, my late mother, and I was talking about people been angry with me in my own community, my relatives, not all my relatives, some of my relatives, and other people angry with me. saying hurtful things to me and to my children. And we all go through that. I'm not exclusive to that. Probably everybody in the reserve has gone through something like that. We even fight each other now, at times. And she told me, oh, son, she's very practical. She says, oh, there's some people so mean, son. They got nobody to bite. By 10 a.m. in the morning, they'll bite themselves. And she laughed, and I laughed, because I know that's true. And probably at sometimes we're that way too. You know, and the saving graces of us as a people is our sense of humor. And I was going through the same things, and I talked to my brother, and I said, you know, jeepers, Brad, I'm trying to help, and I'm trying to do things, you know, and one step forward, two steps back, two steps forward, eight steps back. It's just, I was getting tired. He says, Jerry, I want to tell you something. He says, one-third of the people here, I've been watching, he says, one-third of the people here love you and will do whatever with you, will work with you. And one-third of the people here are fighting you with everything they got. And one-third of the people, Jerry, he said, they simply don't care. I was sitting there nodding my head, and I knew that was true. But that's the same in humanity today, I feel. It wasn't exclusive to my community. It's happening all over. We lost that feeling of togetherness, of clan. You know, our way in Clackman, our way of life. You know, and where we weren't afraid to say to each other, shut up and paddle, you know. And I think about that, and, you know, my cousin telling me, quit being a warrior now, for God's sakes. Be a warrior. Warrior up. Don't lay down and let people step on you. Then the elders telling me, but be respectful. Don't be like them. Because they're ugly. They're mean. Don't be like them. My father was like that. He was honorable and dignified. Wouldn't stoop to their level. You know, I'd never hear my late father swear or use foul language. Well, once I did. Just once. We were shoeing his horses. And he's got the horse's hoof up on his knee, and he's got the tacks in his mouth, and he's got the horseshoe there, and he's hasping the toenail, like it's a big toenail, and he has a big toenail file, and he's scraping it and measuring the hoof and stuff. And the horse leaned on him. And they're heavy, those animals. And he stood up and slapped that horse in the neck and said a four-letter word, and pushed the horse, and the horse listened to him. And he looked at me, and he says, sorry, son. You know, he was sorry that he lost control of himself. That's what I model myself after today. To have that respect and that dignity, and not stoop to the level of the violent ones, the ones that are violent, or the ones that are mean, or the ones that are not listening. Because the violence towards our people over the years has changed. The oppression, very beginning, and I think about it. And I first heard it, I couldn't believe it, that there were men planting smallpox blankets. And I was thinking at that time, I said, oh my gosh, they wanted to kill all the men, the women, the children, and the elders. It was total war. I couldn't believe it. I didn't want to believe it. What is my elders telling me? telling me that. You know, so even with that, them, those elders telling me that, I didn't see that hateful anger in their eyes or the tonality of their voice. And I, you know, the reservations, they were surveyed out and there were survey posts around every reservation. And every reservation is lands reserved for Indians, held in trust by the federal government of Canada. And I've seen examples of the of that law, of the Indian Act that was put in place in 1876 to take us off the land so they can get to the resources, the farmland, the minerals, etc., etc. I remember my, it's with my dad, and we're walking up in the mountainside off the reserve. And we come across all these pipes laying in the ground. And then, like in the middle of nowhere, it's somewhere actually, it's our mountain, you know. But there's no trails or anything there. And I said to my dad, whose are those? He says, oh, BC Hydro. I said, BC Hydro is way over there. What's it doing here? He says, oh, they diverted the water from above the reserve for their town site when they're building the power generating station so they can have water. And I looked down at the cleared land on the benches, and they were dry. And I said, is that why they stopped using those? He says, yes, they didn't have water to water their hay field or their crops. I think I was holding my head at the time wondering, why didn't you guys fight it? You know, my dad and them knew what it's like to go to jail. My dad got arrested for an alcohol-related offense, and he wasn't even drunk, and it wasn't even his alcohol. There was a law at one time in this country, we could not even be in the presence of alcohol. I watched him being arrested that time, handcuffed and put in a police car. And I was angry towards RCMP, taking my dad. So our people felt that the first rules of law in this country about us, they're the ones that really felt it. I talked to elders that were arrested for potlatching on the West Coast, going to jail for 6 months in Ocala. So, you know, my whole point of this is that I must do something, not stew in anger or fear or depression. Refuse to let it own me and control my life. I would tell people, you know, we must get over this anger, because the children, when they look in our eyes, it's all they see is anger, and they'll think we're angry at them. So let's once and for all deal with this anger towards a residential school and towards our experience, so we can be free, so I can be free. That's what I've done. So I could be free. I remember as my grandfather, who I barely knew, my grandmother's husband. My mom told me this story, because before CMHC, our people built their own houses, usually out of logs, or they're small houses, or timber. And my grandfather and my grandmother had a log house. Then one day it burnt down. Nobody got killed, thank goodness. So my grandfather and grandmother built a camp beside the house, set up a tent. And my mom said, as soon as the foundation was cool, my grandfather was in there cleaning away the ashes and the debris. And soon as that was done, he went and cut trees in the forest and hauled them with his horses to the house site. And people could see this in the community, and he peeled them. Then one morning he said, tomorrow morning I'm going to start building our house. And this story just still brings powerful emotions to me, like tears in my eyes and pride, because my mom said when my grandfather stepped out of the tent, the men from the community were there, said, we hear you're going to build your house. We come to help you. That's one of the beautiful stories about shut up and paddle. We're going to do it ourselves. We're not going to wait for somebody. We're going to do it ourselves. That's what I want to role model. That's how I want to live. Look for solutions. I still complain. I laugh because I told my wife, I've been talking about this podcast now for a while. And I'd be talking about complainers. And one day I said, jeepers, I have to do something because I'm complaining about the complainers. I'm becoming a complainer. I have to shut up and paddle. So that's what motivated me to this podcast. You know, part of the big motivation for me for this was there's two reasons, you know, victims. There are still people that are depressed and afraid and angry today because of what happened at residential schools and the 60 scoop and, in life in general. That's why we have to be careful what we say. Because we don't want to reaffirm their anger, their fear, or depression, get them even more angry, more depressed, or more afraid. Because when that happens, life seems to be hopeless. I was doing a talk on my boss in 96 or something, or somewhere in there, said, you go down to the downtown east side and do residential school workshops at the Aboriginal front door. Okay. Packed up my drum, my smudge bowl, and my feather, and medicines, and went down to the front door where there's addicted, homeless, indigenous people, as well as other people. Just not all indigenous down there. Set up a circle and asked for a flip chart, and talking about residential school in BC, when they started, when they ended, how many children and stuff. I have all these numbers. Done the workshop. I had the sharing circle. I realized then that many of them were more angry, more depressed, more afraid. And I said to myself, I'm not going to do that anymore. If I do talk about it, I'm going to say once and for all, we're going to get rid of this from our body, from our mind, from our spirit. I refuse to reaffirm negative emotions in people. That's why the shut up and paddle has been so important to me, and it's taken me a long time to get it where it feels right. It feels right today. I want people to be aware of what they're doing, to know what the impact of their words or their action can have on our own people too. I wanted to be an activist and be a destructive activist when I was in my mid-20s. And we used to meet as young men and women, and we figured out, let's turn off the lights in Vancouver because the power lines run through our reserves. And I told my dad, hey, we figured out how to turn off the lights in Vancouver. He says, why do you want to do that? You guys think about this. People will die down there from that. Elders, children, babies. He had a big worldview, that man. When I hear the term colonial state now, I'll say, you know, we have to add some words to that and say things like, you know, this colonial state is no longer going to impact us, you know, because we're free of it, instead of saying it's still a colonial state. Because when I hear that, I think about the children listening, and maybe it'll stop them from moving forward. Well, these words have been used for many years. If they were effective, we would have all stood up en masse and moved together. But it hasn't done that for us. I think it discourages people. That is, Canada is racist. I have turned it around now and I say Canada is not racist, but Canada has racists. And some pretty serious ones too. I call it a racist spectrum disorder. That there are people in Canada, an extreme right, that would be happy to see us all die. And as a spectrum, that means that, you know, there's a wide range. And as you move towards the center, there's a lot of people there that simply don't care about us as a people. And you go to the left and there's people there that start to care for us, and some of them are our allies, and some of them will do things with us and for us. That's a spectrum. So we have to be careful. I know when we were doing blockades, there were some people that didn't join us. And I sort of understand today, years later. Because the elders would go to town, and because of what we're doing, the racists would attack them verbally. Or with microaggression. And they didn't ask for this. Those elders didn't ask for that. And there we were, excited young activists. That activism done me good. It made me proud of who I am, proud of my people. But at the same time, I must think of the ones that we're again being victimized because we made people angrier. So it's a conundrum. It's what's right, what's wrong. I don't know. I just wanted to just have people consider, to think about their actions. One of my friends and one of my teachers said, if you ever are in doubt or wondering if you should do something or not, ask yourself this question. If it's going to hurt someone, if the answer is yes, don't do it. If there's an answer is no, go for it. Go all out. So let's all be careful and sincere with our words. Let's use indigenous ways. Let's be respectful. But let's make noise when we're stepped on with a clear plan of when victory is going to be there. Because if we don't do it with a plan, we're just doing this over and over again. It's my observation. Because I was doing it in the 70s. I was activist in the 90s. And I've watched people do activism throughout my life. And it hasn't really changed anything. Well, little bits. Now there's land acknowledgements. Now there's recognition. And that's a small part of the process, and I accept that. I'm proud when some young Indigenous person gets up and sings the anthem in their language. Or when they walk around, they look dignified, you know, with regalia. Because at the beginning of this relationship with Europeans, we couldn't even wear our regalia. You go to jail for doing ceremony. It's not like that today. I do ceremony every Sunday, and I don't fear going to jail. Even if they said I would, I'd still do the ceremony, though I'd follow those elders that refused to let it die. That's why I can do a ceremony, because I was taught how to do it. The information was passed down to me by elders that actually felt the threat of Canada putting them in jail for doing ceremony. So let's put our minds together and see what we can do for the children. Let's paddle together. And we paddled together. I've been on canoe journeys, and I can remember being tired. And when somebody had asked the skipper, "Are we almost there yet, skipper?" And he said, "Shut up and paddle." I remember we were paddling once, and we left late for some reason, and the tide was against us. And we're paddling, and we're getting tired. And I'd look over to the beach, and there's this tree. And I'd say, "Oh, that's my marker. I'll see how far we go past it." So we're paddling, it seems like for a long time, maybe half an hour or so, and I looked and that tree's still there. And we all started slowing down, you know, because we're starting to get tired. And the skipper says, "Hey, you guys, keep paddling. We have to go stronger because the tide's going the other way. We're going backwards." You know, so shut up and paddle. So we'd start, and somebody'd say, 100 strong ones, and some of we'd all start counting, 1, 2, till we get to 100, and we'd give a good push, and you could feel the canoe lift up and move through the water. We'd all shut up and paddle, and we'd move to our destination. So what's our destination? It's a bright future. It's going into the light for our children, our babies. Or they won't have to talk about fear, anger, and depression anymore because of what happened, but be free of it and be paddling constantly. When we face struggle, we get stronger. When we say hello to our problems, we can say goodbye. So let's do that together. Let's paddle. Sometimes we have to shut up and paddle. You know? Never give up, be like a lady hummingbird. I'm doing what I can. So let's do that. So I'm glad that I finally found the energy or the feeling to do this podcast. I don't know how many years I've been wanting to do this. I told my crew, I got this podcast, shut up and paddle. I want to do it. But here it is today. So hopefully you get something good out of this, and because all my podcasts are to motivate, inspire people to healing and wellness and pride in our culture, our way of life, our identity. So, until next time, I'll see you.